Welcome to Pharma Talk Radio. Today's program comes from the 2018 Chief Medical Officers and Biopharma Summit. The topic discussion we are featuring is on best practices in communication and PR strategy. The speakers are Raju Joshi, Managing Partner at Clinical Partners Group, and Dr. Zane Kasem, CSO, Finch Therapeutics. The next Chief Medical Officer Summit is April 4th and 5th at the Hilton Back Bay in Boston. Enjoy the podcast.
It's been a great day of interesting discussions, and we're finishing with another strong discussion on best practices in communication strategy. Obviously, many of us in our CMO role face issues surrounding communication, both internal and external, every day, so looking forward to this. We'll have two people running this discussion, Raju Joshi and Zane Kasem. Raju is passionate about applied science and medicine and is managing partner of Clinical Partners Group's Life Sciences Division. She collaborates with medical officers to bring their product concepts to market through R&D strategy development, clinical development, human factors engineering, clinical operations, and blockchain strategy. She spent the last 25 plus years in various sectors of the healthcare industry, including digital health, pharma and biotech, medical device, IDN, and payers, with clients ranging from academics, startups, all the way through mid-sized to large companies. In these companies, she's developed highly effective strategies and global teams that have executed on time and under budget. As CMOs, just as an aside, we like on time and under budget. She chaired an internal scientific advisory board of a major pharmaceutical company and has participated in 7 global launches in the last 10 years. Zane Kasem is co-founder and executive vice president of clinical development and translational medicine at Finch Therapeutics, and prior to that was CMO at OpenBiome. He is a gastroenterologist, internal medicine physician, and epidemiologist. Zane was named a top 40 under 40 healthcare innovator by MedTech and is a scientific advisory board member for the American Gastroenterological Association Center for Gut Microbiome Research and Education. Dr. Kasem's research focuses on innovative microbiome-directed therapies that deeply impact human health and disease. He has authored over 100 peer-reviewed abstracts, publications, and book chapters, and holds grants from the CDC, CCFA, and private foundations as well. Dr. Kasem received his MPH degree with a focus on clinical trials at Harvard, on a Frank Knox Fellowship, and completed his postdoctoral training in microbiome engineering at MIT. He completed both his internal medicine and gastroenterology training at McMaster University, where he was the chief medical and chief gastroenterology resident, and was awarded the National Resident Leadership Award by the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. And with that introduction, let's talk about communication strategies.
So we'll try to keep it brief, to the point. And also, this is we lost a couple panel members, so we'll try to make this as much of an open discussion. This is not us talking at you, but hopefully having a really broad communication about communication.
Yeah, I agree. So how would you, how do you think that CMOs can more effectively communicate with CEOs, maybe chief scientific officers and clinical operations executives, in order to provide a comprehensive summary of the science and business aspects of a company?
Yeah, my approach is the 3 C's. Some of you might have heard of this before. So first is clarity, to be very clear about the message you're trying to convey, whether that's verbally or in emails. Email etiquette is critical. Being able to bullet things out, to be very clear in your title of what you need or request and when the deadlines are is very, very important. So number one is clarity. Number 2 is competence. Come with data, come with a perspective of a solution that justifies the solution, and be confident in the data that you're sharing, so be competent about what you're talking about. And the number 3 is compass, and that's to always proceed with integrity as you communicate, to proceed with a moral compass, because that is important, certainly in compelling and persuading, and also what I think is just right.
Mm-hmm. I would agree, and I think that you know, as a CMO, especially if you're in a smaller company, you're also going to be kind of the chief safety officer. So I think that being able to effectively communicate what the, you know, this potential safety profile of your asset is extremely important. So not only, you know, how, but what is it that you need to communicate and often. And I agree with you, keep it simple.
Yeah, and to dovetail off of that, I think it's important as clinicians, we have a sense to be able to navigate the nuance of clinical and safety concerns. What's statistically significant, what's clinically important are very different. And sometimes as we work with colleagues and collaborators that are outside of kind of pure medicine, it's hard to know what matters and what doesn't matter. So being able to be kind of a polyglot and being able to translate becomes very, very important.
And, you know, to that end, learning to communicate to the investors, the analysts, the board members, and people who may not be, so non-clinicians, you know, what would you recommend doing there?
Well, maybe I'll answer that with a story. So I have a good friend of mine, Steven, and he's a very curious guy. And one day his wife, Tiffany, is making a dinner, and she makes her kind of world-famous pot roast. And Steve's like, oh, I love your pot roast, but like, why do you cut off the ends? There's a lot of good meat there. And she says, I don't know, Steven. I learned from my mom. Okay. Next family gathering, girls around. Mother-in-law comes to town. What does she make? Pot roast. And Steve's like, I get to ask my question. Great. I love your pot roast. I love your daughter's pot roast, but why do you cut off the ends? There's a lot of really good meat there. She also said, I don't know. I learned from my mom. Puzzled. Next family gathering goes around. Grandmother-in-law comes to town. 91st birthday. He's really excited to ask his question. He's like, I love your pot roast. I love your daughter's pot roast. I love your granddaughter's pot roast, but you have to tell me. It's been killing me. Why do you cut off the ends? There's so much good meat there. She started to laugh. She said, Stephen, I have a really small pot. And so the long story, the pot roast story, is to question dogma, ask why. And I think the short story around that is I think often we approach investors and non-clinical phenotypes with a very sterile approach. And I think using storytelling, like an example that I just gave, or using analogies, I find as being very, very powerful. A number of really vivid ones that happened earlier today. And I think these are the examples. Bring it back to that patient. You are the patient advocate. You're their voice. And so being very detailed and specific in a storytelling approach becomes very, very useful to convey that emotion.
Yeah, and I think it does, though. I've seen CMOs struggle a little bit with some of the financial statements and so forth. So just like on if you were trying to look at something more tactically, I think, you know, really understanding IRR, you know, and your ROI and just taking a moment to spend some time on those financial statements, I think will go a long way,
yeah.
Especially speaking with the investors.
And in terms of safety, because I think safety becomes very, very important. One of the examples that I have, so we were screening donors. I worked a lot in fecal transplants. And so, you know, we can quote the number. The number is 2.8% of donors qualify. But instead of quoting a number to the investors or others, we say, well, it's easier to get into Harvard than it is to be a stool donor. And that gives you like a very vivid understanding of how difficult it is to be emphasizing safety. And I think that's a simple analogy to try to equate things to something that's kind of intuitive.
Have you ever had to sell your CEO on an accelerated clinical development plan? And if so, what did you say?
Yeah, I think, you know, as you speak to the CEO about what's like, why is it important, right? I think going down to that fundamental concept, and then it becomes about three kind of core principles. So it's the kind of Aristotle's principles of persuasion. You have to know your CEO and what drives them. Is it logos? Is it logic? Do you have to come with an intellectually refined argument? Is it ethos, which is like the gravitas, so to speak? Do you need to have the seasoned veteran come in and convince them, or a vendor, or a kind of a trusted consultant, or a board member? Or is it pathos? Is it the emotion about the passion? It's obviously a combination of both, but you need to know your CEO and how to persuade them to kind of move down an accelerated development path, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, I think that in order to achieve that, you have to fundamentally be aligned with your CEO. I think that investing in that relationship up front, and you really are the right hand of your CEO, and oftentimes I've seen unfortunate divergence between the CEO and the CMO, and oftentimes the board will look to the CMO, the chief medical officer, to be that voice of reason. So I think early alignment and continual alignment is very important to achieve that. And I think that would just help to gain the trust and the early rapport with the CEO and then be able to convince them to accept an accelerated development path. So sometimes things don't necessarily go as planned in clinical trials. And, you know, what would you say we could do to better educate the public on the expectations of those clinical trial outcomes, be they whether they're positive or negative? And if we do end up with some negative press, what would you suggest would be some tactical solutions on how to address that negative press?
I think it's a really, really important point. I think this has been touched on, I think, throughout the days, expectation management early with patients, with all kind of key stakeholders, regulators, to be very upfront about what they're to see, when are they to see it. Like giving back information is really, really key, but when are they going to receive that? Everyone now wants it kind of yesterday, and so how do you set expectations on when that data is going to become available to them? And then I think it's about making sure there you have patients involved early in the process and other key stakeholders to be able to then help navigate and ask them. I think when things go not as one would expect, you know, I'm a gastroenterologist, so PR means per rectum. In this case, it's public relations. So just to make sure we're all clear, I think talking to experts, right? I think you want to get multiple people's opinion, especially those who have done this before and be able to kind of go through fires like this, but being very clear about kind of a clear PR strategy and bringing in individuals that have a thoughtful approach to it. It's not something you get taught in med school or really kind of in the in residency or even in early industry. I think PR is unique, its own unique phase.
Also living in a time now where press is quite nasty out there. If you think about it, you know, regardless of what the politics are, you know, it's people are saying things that they probably wouldn't have 10, 15 years ago.
I think that's totally true. And I've had a chance to do, like, I was just on PBS the other day, and I think the media can be used significantly to your advantage as well. Mm-hmm. And I think it's how you position yourself mm-hmm. within the scope of things where we've, you know, really engaged, been on the BBC and CNN and a bunch of other media agencies trying to craft the narrative around unique space. And all the technology you're doing are unique. You're fitting an unmet medical need. So don't forget about them in your recruitment phase. They can be a big asset. They can be a big challenge as well. And so, but building relationships, and once you've built those relationships, they may come to you to ask, well, is this actually real? Like, what can we do to talk about this? And I think it's all about relationship management as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely. So if you do have a, let's say you have a, we'll get a little more specific. Let's say there is a death in your trial and you want to present this to the public. What would you recommend to your colleagues in terms of how to approach that?
Yeah, I think that's a tricky one. I'd love to get actually people's opinion about how they would present kind of fatal outcomes. I mean, obviously, the first question is it related or unrelated?
Right.
I think we'll make the assumption that it is a related negative outcome. And then obviously, you know, Juno had to kind of walk through some really difficult situations with respect to a negative outcome recently. And I think this goes back to almost there's a linked question there where we're talking about making sure we're clear about expectations, the informed consent process. And then actually, I think getting the kind of PR firms involved. For me, I think that it's going to be very case-dependent on how you message the story. I think you have to be very thoughtful about the approach. Often in the studies that certainly I'm dealing with, there are very sick underlying comorbidities, and I think you need to have your ducks in a row from a strong investigation perspective, having DSMC assessment before you kind of march this out very publicly, at least in a private biotech field, and be very thoughtful about why and what the purpose is. But I think one should be transparent as much as possible.
I agree. And then I think that, you know, depending upon who your study population is, right, this can become, if you're working with a vulnerable patient population, certainly no one wants to see deaths occur in their clinical trials. But I think if you are looking at patients who are refractory to anything else that's out there, mm-hmm. I think there, and if it's explained in the informed consent, I think perhaps it's a little better understood when you're working with the pediatric population. It can be extremely difficult
totally
to navigate.
Agree. I'd love to hear others' thoughts. Do people have thoughts on how they would handle a fatal related outcome? And assuming you're a publicly traded company, for example, and have to move kind of publicly, if there's a kind of key event, how would other people approach kind of the communication strategy with respect to a difficult endpoint?
Well, can you pre-plan it? I mean, if you're working, with C. diff patients, correct? And they're very at risk. So can you pre-plan it? Have you thought about doing it?
There's kind of, C. diff is a huge spectrum of disease, and so there's severe complicated disease where those are certainly at risk for death, so mortality rates are up to 50% even with colectomy. We're not focusing on that specific patient population. We would be surprised if there was a very negative outcome that is related. I think we are planning around how to deal with, for example, if bacteria goes into the blood, so a septic type of patient, which is something that we've taken very significantly into our safety mechanism, and so how we were able to identify relatedness or not. We have a unique kind of API in the fact that we've treated 30,000 patients without any safety concern in a large cohort. So it is a little bit unusual. I think your point, though, is a really good one, which is, gosh, don't make this a fire drill, right? Think about what can go wrong, pre-plan that, have a very clear kind of stepwise pathway. I think for me, it's as much as about the message, about the process, right? How do you get there? I think your point is very thoughtful.
I think root cause analysis and the FMEA, the corrective action as well, I think is important to understand. And having those safety controls in place of the DSMB potentially, or CEC.
Absolutely.
And I think we just spoke to this last point, which was, you know, what could we do to potentially prevent them or prepare for negative outcomes before they actually happen in real time? And I think having a proper risk-based analysis and being able to communicate that and being transparent, I think transparency is very, very important. Clarity, as you mentioned, is very, very important. And just keeping it simple. I think some of the most successful CMOs that I've worked with had a real finesse about how they would actually articulate distill some of the most complicated and complex topics into layman terms without making the other person feel stupid. You know, because, I mean, everyone wants to be treated with, you know, respect, and even small children, when they would actually get, you know, you see that you hear the stories of the people kind of coming down onto their knees to have a conversation with the patient who may be a child, just so they feel like they're involved in the process, even though I think they're actually speaking to the parent who may be sitting 3 feet away. I've always, you know, felt that those were the most effective and successful CMOs.
I think you're right. Obviously, it's not 10% of what you say, 90% is what you do and how you do it and your body language. And so I think those become critical within how you communicate. And I think within our very electronic world, I want to emphasize, I think, the way that we send emails, and it's very quick to like knock one out on your phone, exactly, and it's very brief and can be misinterpreted. Everyone tends to interpret it in the most negative possible way, especially when you're contacting those that are reporting to you. So you have to be very thoughtful about the way you send emails. I find that's kind of one area that's can be a particularly problematic point in terms of best practice of communication in kind of our modern world.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm curious if anyone has had any sort of communications issues, questions, or stories that they want to highlight. You even see this as important. I mean, it's not important until it's important. You know, I mean, oftentimes you don't really think about communication until it's a problem, and then it's the fire drill, like you mentioned.
Well, everyone's prepared to tell about the good news. They got $100 million, right?
Yeah.
But nobody's prepared about the bad news.
Sure. But they should be, right? I mean, I think that's the...
We recently went through an exercise at our senior executive team of mapping out, and I think it was an interesting exercise. I'd love to get people's reactions to it, of mapping out our press releases for the next 2 years as a way to try to focus on what we think is important. And too much communication can be a bad thing, certainly publicly facing, but what are the key things? And I found that was a interesting driver of trying to focus on what's really important, what do we want to communicate, and I thought that was an interesting exercise.
Yeah.
Reactions
or
thoughts to that?
No, I totally agree. I mean, having a communication strategy, internal stakeholders as well as for external stakeholders, I think is very important. It helps to manage expectations. It helps to give a better understanding of whether or not people are prepared for a certain go, no-go decisions. You know, is it really a binary decision? Is there an alternative, or, you know, is it really truly go, no, go? I mean, so to your point, if you've, you know, acquired a $100 million funding round and everyone's very excited about it, now suddenly everyone's like, okay, well, how do we spend this and have the proper due diligence in place to know where to spend it and ensure proper outcomes, I think, is very important.
Another question that I'll pose is, so when you go from being a pretty small organization to a very significant growth, often after funding rounds, we added 90 heads in the last 8 months. How do you help to make sure that communication filtered all the way down through kind of the ecosystem. Do you have thoughts, Raju, on how you approach kind of hypergrowth and the challenges with communication?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where the leadership team has to be aligned. And I think that, you know, we talked about culture earlier today, and I think that really instilling a sense of transparency in your corporate culture is extremely important, regardless of what your size is. And I think that, you know, there are certain triggers that we want to communicate all the way, you know, from entry-level staff to the CEO. But I do think that in terms of rapid growth and being able to communicate, it's being committed to that level of transparency. Mm-hmm. So maybe still making the group feel like they're a small company, even if suddenly there are 100 new faces that they see. Mm-hmm. I think there are advantages to being in a small company and being able to have that level of expediency as it relates to communication.
Mm-hmm. Curious your thoughts. So I know a couple of CEOs that do this, where they do kind of town hall meetings kind of pretty regular. Do you have thoughts on that? Is that a good strategy? Is it maybe overblown?
I think it just depends on the culture. You know, some of the town hall meetings, I remember I was working for a large organization, and there was a Christmas party that always occurred in the corporate headquarters, which was 2,000 miles away from where I lived. So I got to watch it on a video monitor.
Streaming.
Yeah, of everyone having fun, drinking punch, and they didn't even serve us refreshments, you know? So it's like, okay, well, at least help us feel part of the process. I want some of that punch, you know, that kind of a thing. But I think it's just, you know, I think to the extent that you can continue that type of connection with your folks, I think that's it's extremely important. I think we underestimate it.
Mm-hmm.
Could I?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, a chief medical officer is responsible for the safety of clinical trials and also when you got your product on the market, you know. And as a ex-regulator, I have been in this situation many times when things go wrong, either in the clinical trials or, you know, in the post-authorization. So it's not only the communication with the CEO within the company is important. It is the whole issue about, you know, what to do about it and also make the communication with the FDA, EMA, or whatever regulator who is in question, which territory you are in. And that is something, sometimes a very, very difficult exercise. And also the issue of the communication strategy, which need to be coordinated between FDA and the company. You know, we need to send more or less the same message. And I have been involved many, many times in the discussion with the companies about how to do it. There is a lot of issues to think about. How do you, if the product is taken from the market and you have to stop the treatment with all the patients, how do you communicate that? What kind of channel you have? You need to be up because you need to send up a dear doctor letter. So be prepared that you really have all the address to the doctors in order to send it out. And you need also to communicate to the patients. What are we saying to them? Are they continuing the treatment until they go into the doctor, or should they stop immediately? And what kind of consequences will that have? Mm-hmm. So many, 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 during my time, I had the whole issue of the safety of oral contraceptive, which was a big issue with deep vein thrombosis, and it was a big fight, of course, about that between pharmacoepidemiologists and statisticians and others, but you know, there was a long story going on. I remember one when we took Avandia from the market. And there we as regulators were standing in a difficult situation because FDA decided to keep it on the market. And we took it from the market. And I was able to have a discussion with Peggy Hamburg. And so we went out with a communication strategy, even though we had different decision. So we were worked on a press release that was a common press release, both from FDA and MA, where we explained why FDA kept it on the market and why we in jury took it from the market. And that also was, of course, coordinated with the company. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So CMO have a lot of responsibility, I think, in order to coordinate all this communication within the company, but also with the regulators, and also make the right decision and also inform all the prescribers, the healthcare system, and also finally the patient in the end. It's a huge task.
It is. It is. And I actually like the way that you started this panel by raising your three C's, and I think your three C's, and I would add the I at the end of integrity, so clarity, competence, confidence, but integrity, because you can say something with confidence and not necessarily have the accountability to hold yourself, you know, with integrity. So I think that adding that element of accountability, if you just own it, you know, if there is a safety signal that needs to be addressed, whether it's with the regulator, the patients, all of the above, the patients, the physicians, the regulators, and your internal stakeholders, you got to own it.
Totally agree. Well said. Other questions from the audience? I know we're keeping it from your at the end of the day, so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
The next Chief Medical Officer Summit is April 4th and 5th at the Hilton Back Bay in Boston. For more information, visit theconferenceforum.org. Again, theconferenceforum.org. Thanks for listening.